members welcome and a very good morning. Minister of Energy, good morning. Last week there were cameras with you for me. I will not have now, I can see you decided to come today when there are no cameras. Welcome, you're most welcome to the Energy Committee. Deputy Minister, who's always President Deputy Minister, welcome. He's too busy with something. We want to receive a briefing from there today. So I know the Honorable Makai doesn't quite a lot of that. Changes. The chair of NERSA, the COO, CEO, and all other members of present, welcome. And the Department of Energy. You all welcome. And all the members of the public, members of the CEO of present here. Let us start. Let us get apologies. After apologies, we will ask the chairperson of NERSA to introduce the team that's present. And then before they start with their presentation, he has told me that he's got to leave immediately after he has made his opening remarks because there are public hearings underway with regard to the application by ESCOM. So we've got to go there. So as soon as he has given us this opening remarks, we will go. But before they do the presentation, we'll allow the Minister of Energy to yeah, I'll get you the Minister of Energy. to make his opening remarks. Apologies.
Thank you, Chair. I received quite a number of apologies, Chair. She indicated that she is running late, but that she will be joining us. And then Mr. Bunyani, he is on his way. He was initially going to attend the TC on Trade and Industries, but he's coming over to attend our meeting, Chair. And then Mr. Mabunda, who's on study leave. And then Mrs. Mabanda indicated that she was stuck at Johannesburg this morning, Chair. And then this is Kada, who is busy in a constituency with regard to registration for the coming by-election.
The shadow minister doesn't know about this.
Yeah. And then Mr. Damini, who is attending the Eskom Inquiry Chair. And then Mr. Esterhazen is attending the PC of Trade and Industry this morning. So those are the apologies, Chair. But then we also received an apology from the acting DG that his flight will be landing at 10 o'clock, but he will be joining us for the meeting, Chair. Those are the apologies, Chair.
My apologies. Minister, not then, Chair, and greetings to you and another member. I wanted to put an early departure request because this afternoon, I must be appearing in the NCOP to answer a number of questions. I'm going to request that it is by 12:12. Your Excellency, you release. Thank you.
It will not be a number of questions. It will be a lot of questions.
I'm going to
can, no, we'll do that, Minister. You can, you can.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Also, I think thanks to you for, you know, for indulgence in allowing me to go back to the public hearing. The let me just pass my greetings to the Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister. Thank you for your support. And I'll introduce just the team and maybe say one or a few words. I think accompanying me today, on my right-hand side is the Chief Executive Officer of NASA, Mr. Chris Foley. So he's going to take us through the back of the presentation. Next to him is Ms. Mchimunye. Ms. Mchimunye is a part-time regulator member, but she's also the chair of the audit committee. So if there are any issues that the committee wants to ask from the financial statements, from the audit committee point of view, she's here to take the questions. And then next to him is our chief financial officer, Mr. Strauss. He'll deal with the financial aspects of our presentation. Yeah. I'm not going to introduce you, Lloyd. And then we have Zech Kapiga, he's just behind us, from the office of the CEO. And we also have Ms. Massetti, who's head of internal audit. So if there are any issues relating to internal audit, she will deal with them. So those are the team. And perhaps before, just by way of introduction, I think you'll see as we go through our financial statements that we, you know, we run a very clean ship at NASA. But so not only do we have a clean and unqualified audit opinion, we actually do a lot more than that. We get special recognition by the Auditor General for the you know, for the best clean audit in the entities that they audit. So not only do they just look at you know, the number of the qualification, they look at the number of issues they raise, how quickly we produce the financial statements, whether they get changed, and all those sort of issues. So for 4 years in a row, we have won the award. In fact, we have a cup at the office given by the Auditor General for this. So I'm proud to say that we, you know, the team does work hard in to achieve that. And the second thing that you'll see when you go through the numbers is that we meet close to 98% of our performance against objectives. So so again, it's something that we're proud of. But the team will go through those as they do the presentation. I just thought I would just leave you with just those two thoughts as the team goes through the presentation. And again, I apologize that I cannot be with you today, but thank you, Chairman. So, if we can indulge and with your permission, I can give to the CEO to start the presentation.
Okay. What time do you intend to leave in?
Right now. The hearing started at 9, but I thought, you know, let me come and apologize in person.
Okay.
And
just listen to what the minister has to say.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll leave after.
About running a clean ship.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. and the other members of our committee, then to our deputy chair, Comrade Majola, to our chairperson of NERSA, Obama Donsela, and the team, and the others that are here. Well, then, just for allowing us to make some few remarks, Chair. And firstly, to thank you for the warm reception you gave us when one was reassigned here, and accepting my apology that other week when one couldn't come here, and the apology that was also clarified by the Deputy Minister. Well, where we stand as a department, we are very pleased that as members of Parliament through this committee, our entities, that the law provides that we oversee them, we are making up to account. And we are very pleased that the first one that we account is an institution we can be proud of. Like the chairperson has said, that over a number of years, they've been running a very stable organization in terms of governance and leadership, but also in terms of the mandate that the law provides. And also, again, on behalf of the ministry, to appreciate that you are giving him an early departure, because the work that is happening outside, the listening to the voices of our people around the request by ESCOM, around the issues of tariffs, which is a very important issue and a very emotive issue under the current economic climate environment. Well, the other issue that we thought we could say, Chair, just briefly, is that we understand our main mandate that energy is the most important input into our economy. Very important input. As currently as we stand, we are estimating that our contribution in terms of the work we do and the influence, we are actually contributing to more than 84% of the GDP. Without energy being at the center, we would have bigger challenges, because if we can't secure the energy security supply in a sustainable way, in an affordable way, but more importantly, the energy sector must be transformed. It has to be inclusive and represent the majority of our people. But lastly, there is an issue that we must always be environmentally responsive, because we don't want to pass those other issues to the next generation. In the last few days, Chair, we had a very good process in the department. We've been briefed on a number of issues that we hope that later on during the course of this year, we should be able to come in account on a number of issues. But more importantly, we had very important international events here. Last week, we had a very good meeting of hosting the Africa Oil Week, which is an annual event. Very important developments in the continent of Africa about Africa's potential in terms of oil and gas, and the relationships that we seek to actually do, because we can't continue to be an importing country, but our own, we should be able to also to produce, because it's very important for our own sovereignty. Because sometimes energy or oil and gas can be used for political reasons, to influence certain decisions countries must take, but also there are security implications under very difficult times. When the first person I had to meet as a new minister was the Secretary of Energy from the US, Mr. Perry. Normally, Comrade Majola normally puts me into, no, that's not Perry, it's Perry. Very interesting things we discussed. We met with the Nigerians, Equatorial Guinea, and the others that were here. We're also very pleased to receive experts a week before, experts and policymakers people who are developing technology around nuclear.
Mm.
What we call them is a group for international forum. Those people who are developing nuclear reactors and how advances are made at the right time. We discuss those issues. We are coming here. We are not going to be changing policy. The policy for this country remains the same. The mission is to ensure energy security on a sustainable basis. You transform and you become environmental responsive. The energy policy of this country has not changed. We have your renewables that are going to proceed as planned, which is your solar, your wind, and so forth. Then you have the non-renewables. Currently, your system uses coal. We use gas, and we're using nuclear. These are the things that will proceed with them, but being responsive on the question to say what do we have, what do we need, and what is the variance. And at the very same time, also just to advise that in the next few days, not weeks, Chair, we will conclude the RP, because the RP has become an issue of interest. Remember, there is an existing RP, there is no gap. RP is there between 2010 to 2018, but they've been changing in the conditions where we operate. We are doing some refinements. We have received comments from various people, and we should be able to conclude the RP at least by the end of this month or early next month. And in our own small interaction, we've met a number of users. More importantly, the big users, intensive users, they are raising a number of issues, but there is a spirit to say we need to be able to commit, they will invest in the economy, but there are issues of concern that they need to deal with. And then we'll also be meeting the other people that we think are very important. Also, the integrated energy plan is one of the issues that we need to be able to look at. And then at this stage, we'll also be interacting with all the entities that report to the minister in terms of our legislation. Others, they are in different shapes and challenges they face, but we're pleased that NERSA is the one that we can be proud of. We can be able to share experiences. If you have one of the agencies or entities established in terms of our laws that performs well, under one organization, we should be able to say how do we replicate and how do we share experiences, including expertise, so that the others should not have a problem. Those are the ways, Chair, just to say upfront, we want to congratulate the team that is led by the Chair and the CEO of a very good job that they are doing. And we're wishing them well in the very important process of this public hearing. There's a lot of expectation and pressure that will be put on them, because for the economy of this country to be able to prosper and under these difficult conditions, we must be able to ensure that the prices are more affordable. And finding a balance between affordability but also under consideration that has a, is going to be one of the challenges and contradictions that we should be able to manage. But as I've said, as a ministry, we are looking forward to be working well with the members of the committee here. And we are prepared to come and account, but also not only accounting, because at the end of the day, the interest of South Africa of energy security is more important than all of us, because our children can't blame us and say that we never planned. They are inheriting a country that their fortunes can't be guaranteed. Those are the few ways, Chair, that we thought with the honorable members, let's share. And we said, let's appear here when these entities, they come and report to give them the support and show that we will also be on behalf of the executive, ensure that they are given all the necessary support to perform. But in this one, as you said, we don't think there are many issues, except that we can actually use them, that others can take a leap out of them and emulate their performance.
Thanks very much, Minister. Thank you very much. Mama Makai, you can't have your hand up for the meeting starts. The meeting must start first, and then you can raise your hand. Why? Why do you raise your hand before the meeting starts?
So, just on the minister's comments, which a lot didn't have to do with nurses, so maybe we can deal with the questions.
I wouldn't say go ahead. Why do you want to respond to the minister's comment? Go ahead. You are abusing your right.
Thank you, Chairman. I apologize for abusing your right. I noticed the new minister has indicated that the long-standing ILP, which was postponed from August this year to January, February next year, is now being moved forward again to the end of this month. Now, we are in October. Does the minister mean the end of October or end of November? And could the minister indicate what has caused the change in the timeline regarding the ILP? And the second question is, does the minister consider nuclear to be an integral part of energy security? The minister has indicated that the focus must be on energy security. So I'm just interested to understand if the minister sees nuclear as an integral part of energy security. Thank you.
Okay. The minister has answered the question. He will respond before he leaves. You can ask more follow-up questions. But that's the presentation. Honorable, welcome. And good morning. Honorable Faku. Good morning. You're most welcome. Last week I asked the FTDG, how come these ladies and gentlemen are running a clean sheet as compared to the other entities. And then he says to me, but you see, look at another regulate, meaning NNR, that it's the same situation. So it says, oh, okay, why are the regulators performing better than the rest of the entities? Why are they not falling into the trap the others are falling into? So it is something we must look at. Is it the law and the regulations governing them? Is it the size of the budget? Is it the size of the organization? Why are these ones behaving in the manner that they behave in that situation from the others? So I hope it's something that we engage with the minister. The other two things I just want to say, following your remarks. Last week, I just want to repeat in your presence. We have already agreed, and I hope the court is finalizing this now, that on the 28th of November, which will be our last day here for this year, we're going to have a meeting on the electricity distribution industry and the state of the infrastructure, which will include COCTA, Treasury, SALGA, all that. So, because they've been telling us that they're having a discussion and there was a ministerial process that was looking at this question of the repair of the infrastructure and the financing thereof. So I hope by that time, by the 28th of November, there will be clarity so that they can come back and report to the committee. So we'll have a joint meeting on the 28th to look at that. Hopefully by then we have found some solution to this big problem of the infrastructure that is in disrepair. Because you can get us, sort out the supply problems, and then but we have distribution problems. The The second thing is that we have identified the 14th of November. It is possible we might move that to the 21st of November, depending on your readiness to have an overview of what we call the big issues. And the reason we want to do so is because there hasn't been clarity and some certainty on some things, which include one of the two we have already talked about. So we want you to come back when we have the discussion and the ministry and the department are clear where they're going on the two policy documents. Say, now we know this is where we stand, this is where we will complete them. The IP and the IP, there's been an impasse on the IPPs, which we don't know where things are now, that you come back to us and say, we'll finalize this process and this is where we stand and going forward, this is what we want to do. Electricity crisis, it's a big problem, it's a big constraint now. So, talk about that and the issues related to ESCOM, and so you can come back to tell us what you think, how we're going to deal with that issue. There are issues relating to petroleum and petroleum products, the outstanding issue of the refinery, are we going to have a refinery or not? So these things are open-ended, you never get complete clarity about what government's attitude. Those type of things. So there will be, there's a whole range of things that we will not go into the detail. But before we go home, you see, we want the committee to be clear. What are the plans of government? At least that there's clarity about where you're going on all of those big issues. So as long as there's clarity, there's certainty, then we can come back to deal with the details. So we'll try and do that on the 14th. Not on the 21st of November, depending on your own day. So we'll communicate with you and make sure that we come back. We'll have a whole day just to look at those things. And then we'll make sure that you are present at the deputy meeting. Okay? Chair, so don't relax after listening to what the minister said. Continue to run that clean sheet. So
thank you, Chairman. The CEO will take us through the presentation. And thank you, Honourable Minister, and Deputy Minister, and the committee members.
Chair, may I?
Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. So the second slide really is just an overview of the presentation. It has been distributed, so I'm going to go quite quickly through it. We're always more interested in really the questions that come after. But if there's anything you need us to slow down on for clarity, then just please let us know. So just the introduction on slide 4. I think, as you say, given that you're a regulator, everything that you do it really is based on the legislation that underpins us. So we are established by legislation, established in October 2005. And we have three acts that govern the three industries that we regulate: electricity, pipe gas, and petroleum pipelines. Slide number 5 is, so our overarching role is really around sustainable development of infrastructure in these three industries, but also the issues of affordability and accessibility, and then to balance the economic interests of all the stakeholders. And really the objective is around sustainable economic development of our country and a better life for them. This is our structure on slide 6. There are 9 regulator members, which the Minister of Energy appoints. 4 of them are full-time members, one which is the CEO, and then 3 other members full-time for each of the 3 industries that we regulate. And then we have 5 part-time regulator members, and the chair and deputy chair are part-time members. This is slide number 7, which is just the independence of the regulator, I think, which really is, to use that term, a golden thread in terms of everything we do, is that we must do the regulatory function in line with our regulatory principles. do have a slide on that. But, and in order to do that, I think this is part of the structures that, that help us to remain within the what's it, the line, is that we've developed policies, procedures, rules, guideline systems, etc. that allow decision making to be open and transparent, but also credible, and we strive for consistency and predictability. So in terms of our mandate, I'm not going to go through the acts again. We've got the primary acts, but we also have levies acts for gas, petroleum, and electricity that allow us to collect levies that fund our organization. And then we have all the other acts, the TFMA, the FIRE, the FAJA, and the constitution. And a lot of what we do in terms of the way we make our decisions is governed by FAJA. So all our processes follow FAJA. And then the way we protect information is directed by FIRE information. So I think this one is quite important. On the slide number 11, you know, what do we actually do? So we issue licenses, and as part of issuing the license, we set conditions. And one of the conditions of the licenses is tariffs and prices, as well as then we have to monitor and enforce compliance with those license conditions. And then we also do some dispute resolution in terms of mediation, arbitration, handling of complaints, and a lot of that is in the electricity area. I think on petroleum we had our first complaint this year since NERSA started, and so we had to actually set up a new process for that even. And then we also gather information, as I said, we set rules, guidelines, and codes, and then also standards that we get involved in, and registering of imported production facilities, mainly on the gas side. As we said, everything for us is about balancing the licensees, who are the companies essentially, and the end users. How do we balance those interests? And I think part of the public hearing today is part of that, to hear both sides and to be able to make better decisions. So, just going into the actual performance, if we go to slide 13, as our chair said, we achieved the fourth consecutive clean audit for the past financial year, and we achieved 98%, which is 57 of our 58 planned annual targets. The one target that we were very unhappy about that we met was there was one creditor that we didn't pay within the 30 days stipulated for that target. So we achieved 99% versus the requirement for 100% of the target. But we've already corrected that, and there's not a gap there anymore. So that's not happening again. We collected 95% of the budgeted levy income, and we spent 93% of our budget on operational expenses. And we maintain a 3-month employment cost reserve, as well as 4.5% of annual operating expenditure budget as a reserve, because obviously collection of levies is not always aligned to expenditure. Just also on that is, if we collect more levies than what we had budgeted for, we do then give it back in the next year in the form of a reduced levy in terms of what we require. Slide number 15, so there are 6 areas of organizational performance that we're going to just go through quite quickly. The strategic imperatives, I'm not going to go through these in detail, but we have a vision, mission, I like to call this our propaganda, because this kind of sells our organization. And we want to be world-class, or recognized to be world-class in what we do. And obviously follow laws, policies, standards, and international best practices. And then we've got the 5 strategic outcome-oriented goals and objectives, which is all around socioeconomic development, security of supply, infrastructure, affordability, and then also positioning ourselves to be credible and reliable. And that is not an easy feat to achieve in the current environment. Just from slide 19 onward is really around the service delivery environment, and we put this in just to show where we align to the outcomes that, to start with, the Minister of Energy has committed to, so outcome 2 and 3, a long and healthy life for South Africa, decent employment to inclusive economic growth. Outcome 6, which is an efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network. And then outcome 8, which is sustainable human settlement and improved quality of household life, as well as environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. And a lot of this is what the Minister spoke about a bit earlier, an efficient and effective development-oriented public service. And then we also, and I think this is what number is it? I've got it there. So, I think it's slide 15. 22. Okay. It's our contribution towards those key government priorities and programs. So it's milestone 4 and 5. So it's around infrastructure again, regulatory framework, and about skilled and technical professionals. And then also around ownership of assets in terms of transformation. And then also about competitive pricing, making sure there's access for poor households. And then also about our environmental commitments. And then on slide 24, which is our contributions to the SIP 8, which is green energy, electricity generation, support of economic development. And then SIP 10, which is electricity transmission and distribution for all. And we contribute or we participate in those initiatives and working groups. We also look at the National Industrial Policy Framework, and we're looking at competition and how do we lower costs for production investment, and then also regional economic development. And then if we go to slide 27, which is organizational programs, this is just the next two slides, just gives you the overview in terms of the way government works. So we run six programs. The five programs, the first five, all have to do purely with regulation, and the sixth one is the administration of this. So slide 50 onwards, which is our corporate governance section, is so we have a corporate governance handbook. It's described to the PFMA as well as principles contained in the King 4. You know, we also ensure declaration of interest in all our meetings and pretty much everything we do. And we subject ourselves to an annual assessment on the effectiveness of the regulator and the committee. Slide 31 is the portfolio committee, which is you or our oversight, but our executive authority is the Minister of Energy, and we submitted a number of required documents and a performance plan, quarterly performance report, and an annual report to the Minister. And it's not easy, but we generally make those on time. But it takes a lot of doing. Slide 32 is just a bit of a view of how we work. So we have a number of subcommittees. We've got the three sector subcommittees, and we've got a regulatory executive committee, which is also to do with regulations. And those are all open to the public. And then we've got our governance committees, which are not open to the public, which is the human resources, finance committee, and the audit and risk committee, and the finance with adjudication. So risk management on slide 33 is we have a risk management policy which was revamped this year, or the risk management, the strategic risk register was revamped this year, and we have made some progress about top 10 risks. We also have quite a strong internal audit function. This is sitting behind me, that keeps us in line. And the internal audit unit completed 34 audits for the last year. We also have compliance monitoring in terms of the PFMA, and then fraud and corruption. We have no cases of fraud reported during this past financial year, and we do have a hotline in place for anonymous reporting, which an external service provider runs for us. Just key achievements for the financial year. If we go to that table on slide 36, it's really just about we achieved a 98% performance for the past financial year, and we're hoping to maintain or better it. But not only just maintain what we've got, but to improve the stretch in our targets. So maybe maintain the performance level, but have targets that actually stretch us a bit more. So if we go to specific achievements, if we just look at electricity industry regulation, which is slide 37, we've approved 175 municipal and 12 private electricity distribution tariff applications. There were 10 generation licenses granted under the REIPPP program. And then we also confirmed for the last WMIPD3 the ESCOM revenue decision, and that was a 2.2% increase that they got for this year. And then obviously we're now busy with just the 1 year for the next year, and after that it will be MIPD4. So if we just go to other achievements in electricity, 46 applications for exemption to the grid code for distribution and transmission and network code were approve, and some amendments for the renewable grid code. And I think the grid code is an area of work in electricity because of the renewables in the system which require exemptions, because the original grid code wasn't developed for that, so we are busy with that. And then the medium-term system adequacy outlook was published by ESCOM as required by the grid code. And then if we're going to fight gas, the regulation, what you want to highlight here is most of the licenses that we processed in the last year were for amendments. And then we had a number of construction projects under license to the value of 72 million rand in the pipe gas area. And then also the Mozambique South African gas pipeline, we approved guidelines for third-party access. So that applies to third parties other than the main incumbents wishing to access that pipeline. And if we go on to some of the other stuff, I don't think there's anything specific here on the other that we need to highlight. This is just some of the normal processes that we follow. If we go to petroleum, we approved tariffs for 22 storage facilities. So we approved tariffs for storage, which means licenses apply for a tariff and we either approve or don't approve it, but we set the tariffs for pipelines, and there were two pipelines that we set tariffs for. I think quite interesting here is that the value of construction projects in the petroleum sector in the storage, loading and pipelines is, under license, was 1.5 billion at the end of the last financial year. We have seen a lot of activity in that area. If we go to transversal regulatory, which is slide 42, so I think something quite interesting here is that we undertook 66 stakeholder engagement and education programs, and that's kind of the outreach that we do when we do workshops and forums. We presented some papers at the AFTUR conference, and we revised our regulatory impact framework because we do assess the impact the regulation that we do periodically. And then organizational, so we received the Clean Audit Award. We've done a stakeholder perception and satisfaction survey, which we achieved 87% and a target of 84%. And a big one for us, and this is our biggest capital project, is the refurbishment of our building. So we commenced that. And two floors of the eight have been completed, and we'll complete that by the middle of next year probably. But our building had some serious health and safety issues because since I think it's 33 years old, it had never been revamped. But now it's starting to look like sort of a normal place for you to work. So our staff development, 67% of our staff undergoing training, both locally and internationally. There was a small decrease, but partially that was due to cost containment measures we implemented from April of last year. We have an internship and a learnership program, and we had 9 learners and 11 interns, but we normally have 10 of each. The learners go through a formal program to obtain an entry level 5 certificate in energy regulation, where the interns just work for a year. They both 1 year contracts. And then staff analysis, page 46. If you look at the last financial year, it was 186 staff, and we had 20 vacancies at the end of the last financial year. We just gave you the current picture, because through the last few years, we did an organizational review, and we had 186 staff strength, but we were using a lot of fixed term contractors. So the organizational structure was reviewed and then approved by the Department of Energy, and so we now have a staff strength of 246, and pretty much all, except 5, which we're still working on, of the fixed term contractors were converted to permanent employment. And so we now, at the moment, sit with 40 vacancies as we sit here today, which we've committed to fill by the end of March, by the end of this financial year. So staff analysis, we are quite proud of is we sit at a gender ratio of 56 female to 44 male, and by far the majority of our staff are African. We have looked across the board, the gender split is maintained, except for one area, which is in our head of department, Sparta, and we do have a number of vacancies there, which we will use to make sure we achieve at least a 50-50 So from slide 49, I'm not going into the detail, but we participate in some regional activities. We're a member of the Regional Electricity Regulatory Association, as well as the African Forum for Utility Regulators, and we participate in the initiatives across the board. If we look at the, I'm not going to go to slide 51. If we go to slide 53, which is the financial performance, I'm going to ask the CFO, Willem, to take that through there. Okay, Willem, maybe let me just do the funding part and then you can do the... So in terms of funding, as I said, we are funded through... So we don't get money from the fiscus. We have three acts that we collect levy through on electricity, pipe gas, as well as petroleum pipeline, and that's how we are funded. We have specific staff allocated to the various sectors, but there are areas that we can't specifically allocate to a sector, such as, I guess, legal, IT, finance, all of those, and there we split the cost 58, 21, 21 of those particular areas. And the way we worked that up was the number of staff in the various divisions. So electricity pretty much has doubled the number of staff that the other divisions have. So and that's how we allocate our, I guess you would call that overhead, how we allocate those. And then on slide 55, I'm going to ask Willem to just take us quickly through the financials.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on slide 55, we just indicate there for the financial year, we've under-recovered on the levies, and the difference is due to what was anticipated the volumes to be than the actual volumes that we've could invoice the industries. Then, Chair, on the next slide, is the statement of financial position, the total asset portion of it, which is the balance sheet. Chair, I just want to highlight there, as far as the cash and cash equivalents are concerned, there's 166 million at year end that was deposited at the Reserve Bank in the corporate deposit account. And then the property, plant and equipment, 41 million of that consists of the land and buildings. Then, Chair, on the next slide, we've already touched on the revenue. There's just a summary of the statement of financial performance, or then the income statement. And you will see at the bottom that NERSA realized a surplus of just over 17 million rand for the last financial year. Then, Chair, if we look at the statement of changes in net assets, there's a revaluation reserve of 28 million, which was the revaluation of the building in the 2013-14 financial year. Then the accumulated surplus there at the bottom, and the CEO has touched already on it, that is the reserve that we over the next budget cycle then allocate back to the industries. After taking into account our approved commitments, as well as our cash mitigating reserve, then to smooth the levy impact on the industries going forward. Then, Chair, the next slide is just a summary of the cash flow statement, and you will see that our cash increased with 14.8 million during the last financial year. Chair, the next slide is just a summary of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the last two financial years. In the 2016-17 financial year, we've incurred 27,000 fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which was a result of an international conference that was cancelled. Due to the implementation of the cost containment measures. So, and in the previous year there was interest paid to a supplier that the relevant employees was responsible for that and funded. The 27,000 of the 2016-17 financial year is currently still busy investigated on. Then, Chair, the next slide is a summary of the irregular expenditure. Now the 4.6 million of the that came over since the March 2012 until March 2016, we will just get some, I will give more information on that on the next slide. That relates to salaries that were paid to full-time tribunal members that were not approved by the minister. That was not approved by the minister. A condemnation was submitted to the Minister of Energy in March 2013. That the minister then approved, subject to concurrence with the Minister of Finance, and the Minister of Finance then did not support that. And the salaries were then frozen, and a new submission was made to the minister in terms of the treasury regulations to condone that. Then the irregular expenditure that occurred during the 2016-17 financial year related to a procurement where the supplier's tax clearance certificate has expired. At that stage, the central supplier database that is administered by National Treasury was not implemented yet, so that was still the manual process in confirming the tax clearance status of the supplier. Issue has been investigated within the finance department. And we have just asked our internal audit division to give their independent view on the matter before we will then take it forward with the necessary actions on that. Chair, I just want to highlight the performance linked to the budget. And you will see that on all the programs there's underspending. The common thread through all of them is the vacancies on staff, but there were also instances of underspending on traveling, international traveling, and consultants, the use of consultants as a result of the implementation of the cost containment measures. And then program 6, which is our organizational measure, there was a delay in the implementation of the refurbishment project that the CEO has referred to, and we've budgeted for 2016-17 to already have written off some of those expenses, and that is why there's such a huge underspending on Program 6. Chair, this is just a summary of the comparatives for the previous year.
Thank you, Chair. So just in conclusion, I think just to give some details on around the irregular expenditure, etc., we've also taken steps to all our senior staff have undergone PFMA training, formal training, to make sure that everyone's here, anyone's had a good enough. And they also have interdisciplinary steps that have been taken regarding the 27,000 odd of irregular businesses and rapid expenditure against individuals that didn't do what they were supposed to do. So that's been done. And then just in conclusion, thank you. We just want to thank the committee. We always value the opportunity to come and present to you. As we said, we know we're a key enabler in advancing economic growth and social investment. And we take our job very seriously. We really continually try to refine our regulatory practices and methodologies so that we can become world-class in the way we regulate. The job that we do generally is a very fine balancing act. As you can see, we are a viable entity. We still operate as a going concern. And I think through the years, the processes, the way we do things has stood the test of time and has shown that we can run a clean ship. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Consistently, there is an under collection of revenue from the electricity industry. The under collection was at 4.5% in the previous financial year under review. And there was under collections of 7.3% the same year. Could you explain the reasons for this continuing trend? The other one relates to the previous one that I raised, the issue of the vacancy rate of 11% is high. Could you please tell us the status of the vacant post? The other one, Chair, when the Auditor General of South Africa was presenting to the committee on the 4th October 2017 this year, indicated that an irregular expenditure of 4.7 million incurred by UNESCO during the year under review. Could you kindly share with us why this irregular of 4.7? Because it was stated that the irregular expenditure was as a result of remuneration of full-time regulators who were not approved by the minister, and you continuously doing the same thing. Two, can NERSA share with us the issue of It has been reported here that NERSA is colluding with ESCOM on pricing. How true is this? Can we share with the committee? Last but not least, Chair, can NERSA update us, the committee, on all its court cases, particularly on its pricing methodology during the year under review and the outcomes related thereto? Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you.
So you understand my problem. I don't think this is the function of maths as inadmissible because they are supposedly meaningless for why. There must be something with regard to performance in this problem. So that's what troubles me. If you can explain what's going on and what does this mean? And it's all of Chair, I wanted to check, man, on page 17 of the annual report, the minister states that the alliance on coal possess the challenge for necessary balancing the electricity needs of the country with the energy requirements. I think NESA can be able maybe to elaborate on this.
I'll take the question that relates to the energy release, and then Mr. Foley will take the question that are operational. I will start with the issue of the irregular expenditure. It arose from the fact that the regulator members were appointed a day before they had to start. And the minister made the appointment on the basis that NESA then has to negotiate the employment contract. And in terms of the legislation, the employment contract, the remuneration of the energy regulator member is supposed to be approved by the Minister of Energy with concurrence with the Minister of Finance. We then went through a protracted process of negotiating with the full-time members, which took way into the first year of their contract. And by the time we finished negotiating, we then had to go to the minister to get the approval. And at that time, the minister was able to say, yes, fine, you can continue, but I still need to get the concurrence from the Minister of Finance, which we did not get until then next year into the next financial year. And at that time, it was there to say, but can you, we negotiated to say, can we please get the issues that they presented them with the reasons why we're in that retirement and asked for condemnation again, and the condemnation was refused. That is when the salaries were frozen. And the final decision that we got was last year to say that the condemnation is not going to be granted, and that is why we ended up with the irregular expenditure. It's something that we would not have liked to have, but it is more the nature of the structure than what we would have liked to do. I can get.
Yes, we can continue. What were the questions that you're going to answer? Except to say that, so you're saying that we have negotiations with the full-time members. So we speak to the minister to explain that to you. The minister says, fine, but I'm not concerned for the minister of finance. Is the money you implement?
Yes. Okay. So there's something that you indicated. It is not carrying on because the members who were affected by that irregular expenditure, their term of office came to an end last year, and that process is not going on. The main thing that emanated from the issue was the definition, basically the definition of what that remuneration was supposed to be. It was supposed to be tied to the remuneration of the DAs and the interpretation of then what is the maximum or what is the median, or can you get a variance, or are you supposed to be within those boundaries? But that activity is not continuing anymore. At this point in time, within the range that is the range of the DGs, we're not seeing anybody above the threshold of the DGs. And the other issue is our relationship with ESCOM. And that will also go with the allegations by ALTA. We've got a cordial relationship with ESCOM, a relationship that one would expect between a regulator and a licensee. They are at times not happy with our decisions, which is normal, because they are not the only stakeholder that we have to look into. But we have to balance the interests of both the licensee and the user. And we have to do a fine balancing act. And at times, at any point in time, somebody is not going to be happy. But our relationship with ESCOM is very cordial. We understand each other's roles, we respect each other's activities, but we don't thread into each other's territory. And I'll also deal with the issue of ALTA. ALTA had written in some media report that NERSA is a captured state, and they will work on instructions from ESCOM. The issue that happened was that with the current application, ESCOM has requested that we treat some information as confidential, and they provide us with the reasons why the information has to be confidential. And as the energy regulator, we normally provide our reasons for decision for any decision that we make. In this case, ESCOM had indicated that they don't want information relating to their phone contract to be made public on the basis that it might impact on their negotiations with their customers. We accept the request and found that we would provide the information that is required, which is the totals related to those coal procurements, but the information that they considered and requested that we treat confidential, we treated confidential. It doesn't mean that because the public document doesn't have the information, we as NERSA don't have the information. And it doesn't mean that when we do our assessment, we will not consider that information. We have the information in front of us, which we will assess and evaluate based on the information that we have in us making the ruling. And then on the issue of the court case that relates to our Section 34 determination, the court found that as NERSA, we have not engaged the public participation process to engage with the public as to whether the minister's request for deviation is acceptable to the communities. That process we haven't done. It's something that we as NERSA have learned from. And in future, we will make sure that we do what is required, which is engage the public with all the applications that affect the South African communities and public. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think the one that was asked about was the collection of the levies, and that we've under-collected, and if you look at the slide. I think maybe just a bit of background as to how we derive the rate that we would charge, for example, per kilowatt hour, or per liter, or per gigajoule of per liter of petroleum product, or per gigajoule on the hard gas side, is that we would get a forecast annually from the licensee as to what they predict their volumes to be. We would then say, okay, in terms of our budget requirement, this percentage or whatever is for electricity, and then you divide that number by the volumes that they predict or forecast that they're going to sell or transport. Now, as you can see, across the board, actually, they've over-forecasted for the last financial year. And that is to do with the economy. I think on the ESCOM side, the other part of the, or other side of the coin, if you want to call it that, is that in the last financial year, we've revised our methodology, because also what you realize is ESCOM needs to rebase its volume projection or its kilowatt hour projection, because we had a certain base and we're escalating on top of that, but economic conditions have changed. So you'll see, and we don't need to go into the application, but in terms of this current application, they've rebased their volumes. Okay. And that's part of the new methodology, because we had realized, you know, we had an over-forecast that was just being perpetuated through the methodology. But so this should correct, especially on the electricity one, going into the future. And on the other side, we also talk to the licensees on an annual basis to say, well, you know, the projections they give us, they need to put a lot more effort into the projection. But we do understand that we're never going to hit the number, because I mean, it's almost impossible to forecast exactly what that's going to be for the year. And that's why we maintain the reserve. And as we said in the previous years, we've over-recovered in certain years, and we can probably take you that particular history. It's the last few years we've had this problem, but before that we were over-recovering. And then what we do is we phase that in where we give it back. So within the budget, for example, if it was 100 million and we over-collected 10 the year before, we would only then recover 90 from the industry. So it is a bit of a balancing thing from year to year. But part of this is that it does reflect the economic situation.
In general terms,
Over cover is a good thing. So that's what generally happens in budgeting. So people are conservative. So that's something happened. Then over is going to come instead of what has been asking. That's what I couldn't understand. What's the problem? So if you say the trend in the past was one of over cover, and only in the financial year you under cover, then it means something wrong.
So just on the vacancy rate, I don't have the annual report with me, but the mass resignations, I'm not quite sure what that number is, but the 11% vacancy rate, what we it resulted from, as we were doing the organizational review over the last 2-3 years, and there are a number of positions that actually weren't filled. So, you know, because the structure was being relooked at, and there were positions that certain of the divisions weren't sure that they were going to need to maintain in the current form. So in the last year we did have a bit of an anomaly, but we are now busy filling all of those positions since March, April of this year, we were given the go-ahead to implement the new organizational structure. So I'm not going to put my head on a block, but I'm pretty convinced that by the end of this financial year, when we give you the numbers next year, we will be at a much lower vacancy rate. I'm not sure about the turnover, because I thought our turnover was pretty standard, but one of the things I think we do understand is that when you are busy with an organizational review, you get a lot of uncertainty amongst the staff. And then you do get people that leave sometimes. But you know, I guess the straight answer from me as the current CEO is that I encourage the staff to grow. And the intention is actually that they grow to a skill level, and we're a regulator, we're a small regulator, where they would outgrow the organization. And they then need to go and contribute at higher levels within industry, government, wherever, and then we bring in new people so we can actually grow those. And we started that process. We've actually seen some of that bear fruit. But yeah, a lot of this vacancy was caused by uncertainty and us implementing the new organizational structure. Okay. Mr. Antonio spoke about the relationship with Eskom. I think from a staff perspective, or secretariat perspective, it is that it varies. Some of it on certain issues is adversarial, some is collaborative. You know, when you're working on the grid code, it's kind of collaborative because they have a lot of that information. But when you're doing the tariffs, and it's not just with Eskom, it's with all the licensees. So on certain issues, you're fighting with them. On others, you're working together to do things better. So it's kind of managing that. But we always stick to our methodologies, our principles, and the fairness of whatever we think. Okay, so what is this other one? What was that? As Mr. Tumini said about the High Court judgment on the determination, is to know, as we said, going forward, we will follow the full prior process that we do for any normal application. That's 555. The court cases, and I think it was a question really about the court cases related to our methodology. So, look, we have a whole schedule of all the court cases, and I'd say 99% of them, there's nothing sought against NERSA really. But there were one or two in the past year. So the one was on the gas methodology. We were taken to court by the gas users group. I think it was also Nelson Mandela group, if I'm not mistaken. The court actually found that the methodology stands. I think they have decided to appeal that, and that's still in process. But it was found to the court that actually that methodology is sound, and it continued. The other one that you probably wanted to know about was what we call the Borbert case, which was the one against the RCA, the Regulatory Clearing Account Processing, where the original finding was that there was a flaw in terms of the quarterly reporting, and therefore it was set aside in terms of us processing the Regulatory Clearing Account applications. But then we appealed that, and then the higher court found that actually that we could proceed because the regulator must be able to have some kind of view on things and make certain decisions. And then that was appealed to the Constitutional Court by the parties, and that was thrown out by the Crown Court as not having any prospect of success. So our process stands. So what we do think is we will continue to have challenges to our methodologies, and sometimes it's good to test it. But up to now, pretty much everything that has been tested has been shown to be sound. If you want to know about all the other court cases that we have on our register, I'm sure we can make that available to the committee so that you're aware of it. But there's no relief generally sought from us. We do watch some of the cases very closely because depending on the outcome, it may have an impact on the methodologies that we employ, and then we sometimes get involved in it. So the other one was this the NERA bill, which I think is more for the department than us, because that's not our area. I think we've covered everything. Which you're not sure if I've missed anything. So what about reliance on coal poses a challenge for NERSA in balancing the needs of the country with cleaner energy? So I think from a policy perspective, that's not NERSA. But in terms of the pricing and what that would do to the electricity price and the pass-through cost that would have to be collected by ESCOM, that's an area we would need to be involved in. But that policy is set by government, and it's done through a procurement process of government. We would follow our methodology, and if you talk about cleaner energy or renewables, we have a cost recovery mechanism that makes that a pass-through for ESCOM. So we don't get involved in those in the detail we do on the ESCOM application. I hope that covers this.
Personal views at this stage because
ESCOM has put a request, NERSA in terms of law, they are listening to it. We don't want to cloud it so that there's a impression of vocal war. But the price is a major issue. And we should be able to discuss it so that at least those who invest put infrastructure on the ground, but those who are consuming, there is an issue that has been raised. The issue that I think is Honorable Kay has raised, and the issues you raised, Chair, I'm happy the issues you raised, because I think let's find time and discuss them rather than to do a piecemeal. Sometimes we bring a number of views. It's always contested, but there's one thing that we should not contest. There's one thing we shouldn't contest is the centrality of energy into any country's economic growth and prosperity. We can't contest that. It shouldn't be contested. But then when you deal with the mechanics, it's something else. Then the issue, sometimes you have a narrative where people are just dumb. You know, energy is actually infinite. In other words, you don't have energy for life. You need to be able to use it in a manner that your future generation. If you are actually blessed with endowment, these endowments in terms of your asset register, if I may use those words, check. It doesn't mean that this is always going to be there. South Africa is a reality. There will always be a source for you to start energy input. And the sources in this country, we have actually made a choice because of our natural endowment. There are only two. We have your renewables. You also have the non-renewables. In the renewables, there is a space that solar is an option. But is it a sustainable option? And to what extent is that particular source is available? Number two, on your renewables, you have hydro. Those of us who work as water scientists, we know I've seen a hydro plant, comrade, 32 minutes now, is built on ink. Because it's much cheaper, it's much cleaner. It might be capital intensive if you start, but water is an input. And in our case, how much available water can get into the system? Then the other one on the renewables, you'll have wind. Those are the renewables. Then on the non-renewable side, it's a reality. You have nuclear. It's not something new. You have it here. Because the way we come through the natural endowments that we have, that if you go and do mining, you have actually highly enriched materials that have been processed. It's here. Then you have your fossil fuels, you have your carbon fuels, I mean, you have coal here. It's in big abundance, then you have gas. That's why if you speak, you must speak to say, you understand from source, generation, distribution, actually transmission, distribution, until to the end use, before you speak, because it's a value chain. And if you jump, you discuss these issues without knowing the value chain. Therefore, that's why they use the weight in South Africa in terms of sources. They say we use an energy mix. That's our policy. It's because what we have. But what we have is not actually available all the time that it can be there for future generations. How do we use it? When do we introduce it? It will be the function of demand. What is the demand? What is actually available and what is the forecast? On the basis of the forecast and of the treasure of the growth of the economy, you will be making a determination to say, in terms of the new build, when you build, because someone is going to be able to invest here. And then on the basis of that, you should be able to do that. In the meantime, the team is finalizing that. I should understand the energy balance. Because if you don't have the energy balance and the projections, you will be actually making stories. Then lastly, on the options you choose, affordability is going to be an issue. Affordability is not about the construction cost, it's also about the tariff. If it is there on the ground, how much are you going to cost? And you don't want to quote to actually take the price and actually make it a burden to the consumer. Issues of a cost is going to be an issue. Issues of environment. You can't say environment is not important. Remember you signed the Paris Accord, the emissions and so forth you will be due. But then there is also issues of transformation. Remember, transformation comes at the cost, even in terms of these things. There will be a number of sectors you are going to do. But the pace and scale at which you can implement any built program will be made on the basis of the demand. If you know the demand and you address these other variables, you can be able to say what you do. This preoccupation by Bonuta, people don't understand that if you say stop everything, all these other sources are affected. The last one is the IRP and the integrated energy plan. You know why we actually want to conclude these things. Want to conclude them because we wanted to create certainty. You don't want people to be guessing. Because if you create certainty, you will also deal with the question of investor confidence. Who's going to actually come and invest here when we are not sure what is your resource requirements, resource availability, and resource planning? You should be able to do it. And I don't think the timeline change should be an issue. Remember, these comments were received as early as March, April. Why just to collate, to consolidate the comments should take so long? It can't. Well, anyway, it's also a definitive decision that we finalize the plan. The sooner we do it, create certainty, create investor confidence, you should be able to meet. There is nothing special about it, Chair. But in terms of policy position, no changes. But the data and empirical evidence will be able to put it here, will follow processes, will be open. The major issues, Chair, you raised were very big. I know the IPP is an issue. As well said, there is a space already in our system for IPP. We need to conclude what is on the table. The issue around hydro, we're proceeding on hydro. Hydro, depending on the growth demand of this country, that's why we're involved with the TRC. And then the question of wind is a possibility in certain parts of the country, not all parts of the country. And then the base load will proceed, but on the basis of who wants it. That's why yesterday we had a good meeting with the intensive energy users. Was nothing to say, what are your investment plans? Because they're asking the question, how much are you going to be building? We said, but you can't build unless someone is saying to you, I'm going to do an uptake. Because someone must take the energy that is available. If you don't know who's going to take it, why do you build it? But if you want the economy to grow at 5%, that's how we're going to use information like credible statistics, project accurate. So that you don't have a situation when one day someone wants to come in, you don't have roads, you don't have rail, you don't have ports, you don't have energy, you don't have the technology. Because if you don't have those and a good thing, you are going to mislead people. When the day of the 21st, if it's the 21st, will come here, we will share even this one that it looks like there's a lot of interest. But will not be diverted from technical understanding of the value chain of energy. Well, probably the discussion is about politics. Who's the preferred supplier? We don't care who's the supplier. We only care that there is guarantee. Energy is here, sustainable, affordable, there is transformation, but then there is environmental responsibility. This is where that's the bottom line. Then the next other issues, let's subject them to due processes. But if that can be the narrative in the country, it could be a good narrative. I don't want to go to too much detail, Chair, because this afternoon I think it will be one of the big issues. But we're here because we understand what are we dealing with. And we understand that it has political components, security components, but it also has economies, and we'll address the three legs. There is no leg that is more important than the other leg. That will be the brief, but we have taken the loose chair on the issues. We'll just compare with your office and the secretariat, we must prepare another slide. We cover them, because if we can cover those issues, chair, you will bring certainty.
Okay. If not, you can close the meeting for the committee. If the public has made a we'll give you a list.
There's a small thing you just said, Chair. We are also, I've not even spoken to Comrade PM. You know the way sometimes we create issues as South Africans. We have taken a decision before the end of the year, before the NGO has its meeting. We are actually going to do an energy now. The people that are affected by the things we do, including this policy position, I think in the meeting of the 21st, will assist us, and after the meeting of the 21st, we will speak to the people that actually drive our economy and stimulate the demand, so that at least when we plan, we don't plan for ourselves, but we actually plan for the country. Who will do it? Because if we don't do it, some of the policy decisions that we might have to make, and if we don't find space to have a broader consensus and input, we should be able not to miss that opportunity. But today, 21st, we'll make ourselves available. At least let's have quality engagement and let ideas flourish. But at the end, there is one base point, energy for our growth and prosperity. If we agree on that one, let's give it mechanics.
You remind me of the challenges. Okay. So I think let's wait for the body discussion. I think one of the most important things. I know that I don't have any money to invest.
Yes.
But we do need certain process. I think part of the problems we've been there at Parliament with regard to our oversight role has been the lack of certainty. So we think that the decision and the decision changes and so that causes problems. And I'm not saying that decisions can't change. So but you must engage when decisions change. But once a decision is taken, we know that and we speak with you. So I think that we must come back to that discussion so that we have to say, based on all of these things, whether it's nuclear, everything else going, the political paper, all of the big issues, there must be some clarity about what we're doing. On the details, there will always be fine.
Yes.
But it is supposed to be general the thing about what we're doing. So there, I'm quite ready, Minister, so we can have the discussion. I know that on the controversial thing, it's getting controversial now, in fact. Where the past is controversy, and then other things happen, and then the controversy came back. We started the controversy, and then up to the point where Honorable Mackay had agreed that no, I'm not opposed to nuclear. We're not opposed to nuclear. The issue is cost. And we said, let's discuss it. So we're not opposed. So we're not opposed to nuclear as part of the mix. So I'm saying that when we have a rational discussion, very few South Africans are going to oppose it, because they can't oppose it on the basis of empirical evidence. They won't. Let's have a discussion. Let's have a proper discussion. There are going to be issues that call what we call scale. So let's get that to that.
But the correctness of the technology, no one can argue with that. So that's the so, just that sometimes we cloud the issues in the public discourse. So honourable members are able to, honourable Matala, I think your last comment, and then you can close for today, and then you can be on your marks for the 25th. We have a long discussion. Honourable Matala, one chair is just clarity. I want the clarity. I'm still living with these issues of electricity, but no, I'm going there. You, the CEO, you are the chief executive officer of NERSA. Mm-hmm. Two, you are a full-time regulator. Three, you are a member of the National Energy Regulator of South Africa. Three positions. What is it? I just want to check what is it. Is it two or three in one? Or you are the CEO running the whole issue affairs? Thank you, Chair.
I think so the dear monster, and on behalf of the CEO, I want to tell you, there's another page here that talks about the regulator and then talks about the regulator. So I think you're not getting there, I'm there, Chair. So you get the question. So I don't know if you want to respond to that. We can go on that to the regulator.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. There is the energy regulator, and I think in one of the earlier slides, it did talk about the regulator comprising of the full-time, four full-time energy regulators, plus the five part-timers. Of the four full-time regulators, one is the CEO, which is him, and the other three are the full-time regulators for gas, for petroleum, and for electricity. Now, in terms of what has been asked earlier around the bill, NERSA, one of the among the things we are trying to regularize is that the fact that we have a CEO who is a full-time regulator. We wanted to separate that administrative position from the full-time, so you have a CEO who is not a full-time regulator. That's one of the things we want to address. The second issue, I think, is what was raised earlier by Honorable McKay around the appeals tribunal. Now, there have been a number of iterations in terms of what is the ideal structure around this. Most people are going towards saying maybe we need to set up something like the competition commission. So you'd have the full-time regulators who are working on a full-time basis. Then you have the appeal, which would then ensure that when outs are complained, they can then go to their appeal. And then you manage the issues around the committees that you have to have the audit committees, the HR, and those would also be managed in that same way that the Competition Commission is looking at. So those are some of the adjustments, because it does cause confusion, and it does, if you look at the structure, among the challenges it has is that the CEO is therefore responsible for all staff, but a lot of that staff actually works and reports to full-time regulators in the different industries. So you have a bit of a disjuncture, but it's work in progress. It's a relatively new structure, and part of those being a new structure, what it has effectively done is that it has taken away some of the powers from ESCOM, which is why you will always have the contestation, because before the ESCOM was everything, including its own regulator in that process.
I said you, Chair, you were also confused.
Yes. So why are you not saying this on the report? So that I can use that to discipline you. Okay, no, you right, you can't write anonymous. That's an issue. The minister really said that so if they're coming back, to clarify. So they've now made a determination and we need to use direction that will mean it is not with regard to the actual amendment process, but they will clarify. Who agrees? And then this is the process which we have, so we know what it means to go. So that has always been causing the confusion. No, thanks for the question. It's very helpful to the community as well. Because that structure is really complicated. And I know that the issues are not so much with regard to the appropriateness of the structure that we the issues of accountability and because the deficit of trust is that who appoints who?
Yeah.
Who's going to be controlling who? That's the thing that was the problem. Not because the structure. But the separation that we're explaining is quite important that we should need the separation. So we'll come back to the discussion and perhaps we can then address the issues of deficit of trust that and the appointment. So thanks for coming. If you're not there in the next few meetings, as long as you're here,
and I'm in the phantom of the
Russia. As long as you're here on the 20th, on the 21st, and on the 28th. Yeah. Don't go to Russia soon. Let's have a discussion and then we have consensus. So when you go to Russia, when you have consensus, there will be no problem. Oh, yes. Yes. There are members there who want you to take them to Russia. I hope we'll all come. Thanks very much. Thanks, Ernesto, for the presentation. Please, man, sort out that residence permit. We don't want a nursery for the
Yeah.
Please do talk to them about that. They're not used to a nursery that has problems. Thanks. See you next week. Thanks very much.
Why is it not